Is the Democratic Party divided? Hello and welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Adam Brandon. He's the president of FreedomWorks, freedomworks.org, for more information. So, Adam, that's the question at hand. Is the Democrat Party divided?
Oh, absolutely, and thanks very much for having me on the show. But
sure,
we are about to watch over the next, I would say, 12 to 16 months, an incredible amount of division in the Democratic Party get exposed. And in fact, if you're sitting over in Donald Trump's world, this would possibly be the greatest strength you have heading into the reelection, is that the Democrats are trying to figure out who they are and what they believe in.
Hmm. Well, let's take an example like some of these freshman congresswomen in particular. I'm thinking of, there's AOC, and then there are two Muslim ones. Mm-hmm. In fact, let's start with the issue of anti-Semitism, because there was a vote basically that was initially poised to condemn any form of anti-Semitism, and then that vote got essentially morphed and twisted. So why don't you comment on that?
Sure, because that vote ended up being a condemnation of just about everything anti anyone and everything, far from its original point. And you're starting to see leaked reports coming out in Washington where, in behind doors meetings in the Democratic caucus, it's getting so raucous that people are actually leaving the rooms in tears over some of these fights. But what you're looking at right now is that you've got some of these Democrats who are getting elected really have a problem if you look at their stance, and not just as I was taught as a young man by my father. If you really want to judge someone, why don't you watch and see who they hang around with? And then you'll be able to see a true, who they really are. And a lot of these freshman members, they're surrounded by people who do not support the state of Israel or believe in its right to exist.
Mm-hmm.
So that is starting to make its way out on Twitter with different outbursts. But let's just take stock here. You have 62 Democrats who got elected, and they are being dominated in the news media by the comments of just three. And these three voices are pretty extreme examples, not just on socialism, but also on they're very close, showing sympathies to anti-Semitic voices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very interesting. Let's comment on AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I think she's the only congressperson I know of that people are just referring to her by her initials.
Well, she's made it, I guess. We've had professional artists who have become symbols and dropped their whole name, so I guess she's just the congressman known as AOC. But in all seriousness, what she is, if you look at her heritage of what she believes in, this is someone who's kind of come up a pretty extremist socialist. I mean, some of the ideas that she believes in are straight out of the pages of Karl Marx and whatnot. And she's not shy about talking about that. And if you look at the policies she's trying to bring in, I guess if you're trying to be kind, someone would say, well, she's just trying to make us look like Norway or Sweden. But we're living in a world right now where we just look down in the Americas, and you see what's happening in Venezuela, how they were once a wealthy country, and they still are sitting on trillions of dollars in mineral wealth and oil, and now you have people starving in the streets. And what she is bringing to the party, was not considered to be mainstream for Democrats, but she certainly has a following, and I think that's what's got to be alarming to Democratic leadership, is they were getting some momentum against Donald Trump, and now all of a sudden all these things that people like me have been saying and warning about the Democratic Party, and people said, no, that can't possibly be true, they are openly embracing it. Things like socializing all of medicine, things like, a very popular plan is to get rid of border control, not just have an open border, but not have any border patrol at all. And these are becoming rallying cries in the Democratic Party in the nomination process. So if you look at reelection for President Trump, is going to probably come down to states such as Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. I'm not sure that this brand of politics plays that the Democrats are starting to push plays that well outside of California or New York City.
Well, let's take a specific example from her new Green Deal. Part of her whole goal, as I understand it, is that within 10 years, we would have completely renewable sources of energy, renewables. Okay, so this means no reliance on fossil fuels. Well, Steve Moore, one of your colleagues at FreedomWorks.org, co-wrote a book about energy. And one of the things he said is, despite all the big push, you know, for, you know, let's try this renewable, let's try, you know, wind power and all these different things, despite all that investment and so forth, still the vast majority, more than 90% of our energy comes from these fossil fuels and coal and natural gas. So those things that she wants to remove, the natural oil, the coal and the gas and so forth, the renewable, you know, the fossil fuels rather, realistically, we're not there yet technologically. And, and in 10 years, no way. And then she's saying things like, well, we're going to be gone in 12 years if they don't solve this. It's, and Beto O'Rourke seemed to say something similar. And it's like, you scratch your head and you think, what universe do these people live in?
It is a problem. When you look at natural gas just as one of these fuels, it is the cleanest. I'm surprised they're not considering natural gas a green fuel. It is incredibly clean. You're seeing U.S. emissions or carbon emissions go down because of the use of natural gas. And now these environmentalists are saying we don't want to use this fuel. I mean, this is a miracle fuel that we've had. That with some of the talk of renewing American manufacturing, energy is such an important component to that. And fuel, particularly natural gas, could be the thing that powers us into the future. There is not the Green New Deal is a pipe dream. There's other things. She wants us traveling on high speed trains and to ban airplanes. Well, I don't know how people in Hawaii or Alaska feel about that. But also, what about my parents who live in a suburban area? How are they going to get to the high speed train? There's a lot of laughable questions, but it's very serious. Mm-hmm. She also wants to redo every building in the United States. Look, if the Green New Deal came into effect, you'd be looking at a massive federal control of the entire economy, and that's pretty much communism, socialism right there. Just because to get to her goals, you would need an all-powerful state taking charge of every facet of our life, from agriculture to power to the homes that we live in.
Wow. Okay, now, is she just speaking for herself, or are there a lot of others that feel the same way? I mean, didn't Kamala Harris, one of the Democrat candidates, didn't she say something, hey, I'm for the Green New Deal too? Did Beto say as much?
We all are starting to pile on and say it. It's kind of amazing. No one has the guts to stand up and say, this is kind of insanity, folks. Look, you're giving, if you were just a Democratic strategist, You look at the size of the weapon that the Democrats have handed you if you're a Republican to show how out of balance your policies are. But what I think happened is even people like Nancy Pelosi are starting to seem like a centrist compared to this new crop of Democrats. And remember, AOC beat a member of Democratic leadership and just kind of unleashed the power of this part of their base. And is it the majority of the Democratic voters? I don't know if it is yet, but they certainly have a significant portion of the base that is all fired up. And even people like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders don't seem like they're as radical as they were just a few years ago. Wow. And this left-wing lurch of the Democratic Party, I firmly believe that this is still a center-right nation that believes in free markets, that believes in rule of law, that believes in the Constitution. And this is proving that the Democrats, I don't know if they keep doubling down on these extreme lefty positions, it's hard for me to see a path back to victory for them.
What about the issue of abortion and infanticide? Mm-hmm. Now, I think people should have their convictions about abortion and infanticide regardless of their political affiliation. And what I mean by that is, in other words, my views as a pro-life person are not shaped by my politics. My politics are shaped by them. To me, it's a conviction. It's not a preference. Okay. Now, repeatedly in recent days, the Democrats are essentially on record saying, no, we will not oppose these laws that you're proposing that are essentially banning infanticide. Well, how do you think the pro-life issue may play in the 2020 election?
Well, I just think back on, we've seen some of the quotes out of the governor of New York and then the shamed governor out of Virginia. The governor of Virginia has actually said that if the baby is born while you're deciding what to do with it, we'll keep that child comfortable, which is just unbelievable. And even if you were a pro-abortion person, I think you would have a very hard time with that type of rhetoric and that type of policy. So what you tend to see in politics in America is overreach. Now, if you believe in life, you know, of course, you believe in life throughout the whole process here,
right,
from the very start to when the baby's born. But when you look at some of the policies that are happening right now, even people in America today that are comfortable with abortion in the first term are finding these positions incredibly extreme. And when people find out that the United States has some of the most liberal abortion laws on the planet,
yep,
that does give them pause as well.
Yeah, like, similar to North Korea.
Right.
As opposed to Sweden or Norway or something like that. Okay, what about somebody like Joe Biden? He's almost coming off like a, this guy's moderate almost.
Well, I think Joe Biden's argument when he would get into the race is, hey, I'm your best bet to beat Donald Trump. Again, I'm really looking right now at this point. I'm feeling pretty good about Florida. I'm feeling pretty good about Ohio. The states that I look at that are most going to be important for Trump's reelect are going to be Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, those upper Midwestern states. And Joe Biden is going to argue that he is the best one suited to win those seats. But if you look at the Democratic primary, the California primary was moved up to the very beginning of the roster, so all of a sudden, and they also changed their superdelegate laws. Used to be that superdelegates had most of the votes in the Democratic primary. Now superdelegates, I believe, don't come in until if there's a second ballot at the convention.
Okay, so what does all this mean then?
Places like California they're going to have a huge say early on,
wow,
in the nominating process, and that hurts someone like a Joe Biden.
Mm.
Joe Biden will play better in Iowa than he does in California.
Oh, I see. So the way the Democrats are kind of working it out, it's going to favor the more liberal Democrat,
yep,
candidate, but the rest of the country might not agree with that.
I could easily see a very long, long primary that goes all the way to the convention, all the way to Milwaukee. By the way, I mentioned Wisconsin. There's a reason they're putting their convention, their Democratic convention, in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
But I could also see a where if Kamala Harris wins big in California and Kamala Harris beats Beto O'Rourke in his home state of Texas early on, she could have this thing wrapped up. And then my guess is her vice president nominee would be probably the Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown, a Kamala Harris-Sherrod Brown ticket. And I could see that being a formidable ticket, but again, I would take that because I believe the politics that they would be pushing would be out of touch with the industrialized Midwest.
But I do think, too, that, because the media is essentially on the side of the liberal left, they will give people a pass. I mean, even now we're hearing stories about Beto O'Rourke that just sort of make you scratch your head, I guess some sort of juvenile stories that he wrote about babies being killed. And I'm not talking about abortion. I'm talking about,
right,
babies that are, out of the womb, whatever. But the media is a factor. How about a comment on that?
Well, when I look at the media, in the last election, the media was clearly has never treated conservatives and Republicans well. And you just take a look at, you turn on CNN right now, and I guarantee you they're doing some kind of story trashing Trump and talking about the Democrats. But this is why this primary can be kind of amazing. Is now you're going to have Beto O'Rourke going after Kamala Harris and going after Bernie Sanders. So they're going to have a food fight on their hand. And trust me, everyone is going for the ring here, and they're all going to be beating on each other. And at the end of the day, I think people discount what the media is telling them. And this is, to me, why things like this radio program I'm on right now and social media are so important, because this is usually the best place you can get for unfiltered views, news, and opinions. So I don't think people are really going to be putting too much into what the Democrats are saying, but I can guarantee you once the Democrat is nominated, that person is going to be the gift to our nation, and Donald Trump is going to be evil, and that will be the narrative they will take all the way through to Election Day.
Absolutely. Adam Brandon, thanks so much for being with us. FreedomWorks.org for more information.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, and look forward to doing it again soon.
Okay, thank you, Adam. Bye-bye.
Take care.